Hello from Burbank, California. Thank you for joining us once again. Another episode of Write That Down this week on the Fight Game Media Network. I'm Justin Nipper. I edit for FightGameMedia.com. I write on WrestlingObserver.com. I also work for Pro Wrestling Noah and CyberFight. And this week I'm back again with Japan's leading pro wrestling author and sociologist and historian, broadcast journalist, all-around fantastic fellow, Mr. Fumi Saito. This week, finally, we got to cover Kenta Kobashi. We went over his entire career, talked about his struggles early on fitting in with such a packed roster filled with wrestlers who had prestigious amateur wrestling backgrounds, sumo backgrounds, whereas Kobashi would come in to All Japan Pro Wrestling purely out of passion for pro wrestling. I think he's arguably pro wrestling's best babyface of all time. There's an argument to be made, for sure. But if you've been listening to the show for a while, this one's been a long time coming. It was fun to do, so enjoy like we did. If you haven't already, please subscribe to the Fight Game Media Network podcast feed on Spotify, Apple, or wherever you usually listen to your podcasts, because it helps us out very much. Without further ado, oh, and happy Thanksgiving, everybody. Before we get started, enjoy this over your break. But yeah, let's get into it. Happy Thanksgiving, happy Kenta Kobashi Day. Okay, so today, Kenta Kobashi, I mean, we're trying to, if you had to rank him among the four of the top four from that All Japan we were talking about, it's hard to rank him and compare him with Misawa and Kawada because of his background. That's one of the first things you have to factor in when you're comparing him with the others from All Japan at that time.
Misawa, the high school champion, Kawada, high school champion, and of course Akira Taue, as Tamakirin, that big time sumo wrestler, and even Tsuyoshi Kikuchi, he was high school amateur champion,
And later Jun Akiyama was like
the college champion,
So he even though he was a big, athletic, good looking guy who wanted to wrestle, he didn't have the, I guess, the exact background they were looking for.
What Baba was looking for. Same story with people like, you know, Yoshinari Ogawa. You know, he played baseball, and he realized that first year in, Mr. and Mrs. Baba would pick who's going to be starting, who's not going to be. You know what I'm saying? That's like devastating for rookie to look at. You know what I'm saying?
Sure.
Like, oh, wow, I'm going to be around, but they're not going to push me, right? Or something like that. So against all odds, yes, Kenta Kobashi became much, much bigger star than the company expected. This is a real big success story right there.
He and also, he had to fight a lot more than those
others. I think so. And also, we talk about Big Four. Well, we can go through that. This, you know, four pillars of heaven story too. But the Shitenno is the Japanese word for it. Four big ones. Shi, four. Ten, heaven. No is like a king. So that's how they translate three different kanji and put together the pillar, the heaven. What was that? Pillars of heaven? Four pillars of heaven.
Four pillars of heaven, the heavenly kings. It's hard to describe if you don't. It's rooted in.
Shitenno is one word, you know.
And it's from a more Asian Buddhist background. So it's like
nothing to do with this heaven thing.
Yeah, I mean it's heaven, but it's not Judeo-Christian heaven. It's
right.
But basically, it's up there, but it's more like it's like saying the Big Four.
Big Four. Shitenno.
It's the Big Four.
Yeah.
And it's a common word. It's not just for wrestling.
No, this is a regular term. Shitenno, four big ones.
Yeah.
And one word.
Just like three musketeers. It's same idea.
We can say three samurai, you know, worked for the castle or something.
Sure, but
three musketeers is another word that we use a lot. For either three or four, but this is a four big one. And you say Misawa, Kawada, Taue, and Kobashi, right? And they were actually like in the same age group besides Kobashi. Taue born 1961, Misawa born 1962, Kawada born 1963. But Kobashi was 1967. So it's like 5 years younger than other guys. Yeah. So he felt that too when he started. Yeah, it's like his Kenta Kobashi is such a success story. So I don't even know where to start, but let's talk about
when he wrote. We were just talking about it before we started recording, but when he wanted to be a pro wrestler, and he wrote a letter, or he sent his resume to
sent his resume and photo to All Japan Pro Wrestling. Mm. He thought that how you apply for your job, right? Hmm. Sending your bio, you know, athletic resume and the photo, you know, like upper body.
Actually,
photo.
Could you explain that a little bit? Because in Japan, the resume expectations or the template for what you send out after college is very, it's different than...
Is it common?
It's a little bit
felt,
more extreme.
You felt what's different, unique to Japan?
Well, you're required to put your photo on it. That's one very different.
Right. That's like almost like a discrimination now, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because you don't judge by the look.
And it has to be like two or three pages, and it's all about having a lot of content on it, a lot of words, a lot of text, beefing it up as much as you can.
Even like a grade, what grade school you went to, and what year and what month you graduated from, and what junior high, and what high school, and this and that, right? Yeah.
And it's often, I mean, when it's just common in Japan, when someone graduates from university, this is what they do for the first, you know, year or two, or even more for some people. You go through this resume process.
Company goes through these paper bio, then they'll, you know, pick who they want to have job interviews. So mm-hmm. some people are not going to make job interview even.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? Yeah, it's like... I didn't realize that you felt was like a system and the custom was a little bit strange, huh?
It's more rigid than I think what we're used to over in the States, or maybe like on a CV in UK, for example.
Oh, okay.
Just a different format. Same idea, just different.
But it's a common, you know, common practice and common sense kind of thing that that young 18-year-old Kenta Kobashi, actually like a 19 then, because he's right after high school, he didn't think he was big enough, you know, physically, that he started working for this big factory called Kyoto Ceramic, Kyocera, you know, big factory worker. And he's, you know, asked the, you know, factory chief or the your you know, factory boss that please buy this, all the weight sets and put up in the roof, and then let's start the bodybuilding club, you know? Mm. And he was the only one pumping iron every night, you know? But he sent this, you know, written form of resume, redirection thing and photo, and apply for like a rookie position, right?
Mm-hmm. Just like any other person would apply for a job. After graduating. Same
meaning
system.
That he had no connection to wrestling, like mm-hmm. wrestling people inside or promoter or any wrestler that he knew personally. Is he from front door, knock the front door, that sending a letter to All Japan office in Tokyo.
Mm-hmm.
And a couple weeks later, he got the letter back from All Japan office. He thought it was all right, accepted, right?
Mm.
Then he opened the letter saying that read your bio, not accepted. That was the end of it.
Mm. So
what did I do wrong, right? Or did I write wrong? Or what was wrong with my, like, personal bio? You know, he was all through his childhood judo and played rugby. And after high school, he, you know, spent a whole year, you know, lifting weight and putting on weight. And he was all ready to become a wrestler. He quit Kyoto Ceramic, and he was ready to come to Japan, you know, not to Japan, but he was ready to come to Tokyo and to become a wrestler, you know, and it wasn't that smooth. So can you imagine how hard it is to, you know, for, you know, from kind of country boy from like outside the Kyoto area, that to call up All Japan office in Tokyo, you know, pick up a phone. It's before, a little bit before your cell phone, decades before the internet, right? Mm. And he actually picked up a phone and called All Japan office to ask what was the reason that he didn't even make a paper, you know, the bio. And the person answered the phone said, two reasons that you don't have very good athletic background. Mm. And number two, little bit too old. He was 20 at the time. Yeah, like right out of high school, 18, yes. But you don't have very good athletic background, meaning that, the jumbo, like a giant baba, the former baseball player, major, you know, Giants baseball player, Jumbo Tsura, 1972 Munich Olympic, the Tenryu, the big, you know, sumo star turned wrestler, Misawa, high school champion, Kawada, high school champion. Yeah, you do have, yeah, these, you know, like really, yeah, almost like a premier athletic amateur background, huh?
Especially at the time,
yeah, late when you 80s. Only have like a three or four companies in Japan, All Japan, New Japan, and UWF Group,
and all the top stars had that background for the most part,
right. And
then, whether it was wrestling, it was sumo,
right? We thought it was normal, but it was really hard to get into business at the time, huh?
Yeah, there was no direct way to get in unless mm-hmm. you knew somebody or related somebody.
Yeah, but they think about like a young 15-year-old Atsushi Onita came right from Kyushu, Nagasaki to Baba's office, and he was accepted when he was 15. Probably Baba looked at it and said, you know, this kid had something.
That's a long trip.
Yeah.
Very long trip.
The 15-year-old Atsushi Onita hitchhiked from Nagasaki to Tokyo.
That's pretty. I mean, it's
that's another story for another. Right. Great, yeah,
it's his
great
character. Story for
another, yeah,
it's in his character.
Yeah,
that's far. Right,
he was 15, huh?
That is not. I mean, Nagasaki's an island, so I mean, it's not easy to get. It was not easy to get.
Yeah,
there.
So it's not one hitchhike. It's like days and days, yeah, right?
It's that was he that must hardcore have
stood
journey
by the. Stood by the freeway or highway and just pointing his thumb up and like, "Can I get a ride?" You know. That's what 15-year-old Onita did. Anyhow, that the Kobashi called his, you know, All Japan office. It's like, that's like a big challenge, you know, picking up a phone, you know, speaking professional language, like almost like, may I speak to whom it may concern, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and then this person said, you know, we do have a paper here that you don't have very good athletic background and you're a little bit too old to start. Mm-hmm. What? Just turning 20, you know, and later on, Kobashi himself told me that, you know, that the same group of rookie who, you know, started together, there are the three wrestlers, Kenta Kobashi and Tsuyoshi Kikuchi and Tatsumi Kitahara, later on Koki Kitahara.
Mm.
Kikuchi is 2 years older than Kobashi, and Kitahara was 3 years older than Kobashi. It's like that doesn't really make any sense, right?
Mm-hmm. But they had the background in wrestling, at least Kikuchi did.
And also Kitahara was instructor at the Sayama's shooting dojo.
Oh, okay. So yeah, he had
that's a good background,
striking
right?
Striking background, okay.
Instructor at the Satoru Sayama's Shuto Dojo. That's like a guaranteed tough guy, huh?
That was also a very big dojo. There were a lot of people that trained there, even if they didn't become fighters. Those classes were with, you know, 50, 60 people in them, and the Shuto was
also
around the time.
Kitahara must have had Sayama's blessing to be an instructor there.
Hmm.
Yeah.
So Kobashi didn't have any of this coming into it. He had nothing to
taller
no
than either of them.
He had his own. He was a big dude. He had his looks. He had passion for it, but he didn't have the background they were looking for.
Yeah, and then so he tried a couple times, you know, to try to get the more reasons. Can I speak with somebody that I can explain this to, or and. After second in the phone conversation, he was told to come to this middle of nowhere house show in the town I've never heard of, you know, that it was during the one tour, you know, that but Mr. Baba decided to audition you, or at least meet you, you know, and come to this so-and-so prefecture, so-and-so house shows, like no TVs, you know, like during the long tour. I mean, it's like house shows that nobody comes to. I mean, people come locally, but you know, you would think you would be auditioned at the Tokyo Korakuen Hall, right?
Right, but these shows, they're a little bit maybe less energy.
Yeah, in the middle of nowhere town, but the one of those night in like a house shows during the school nights, right?
Usually at the recreation center in the town, very bright, not a dark place, but like you know.
Yeah, the existing lights.
Mm-hmm. Or yeah. Daylight or whatever.
Yeah, but all right, I'm coming, and it's like he took trains and tried to look, you know, like before Google Map, right?
Mm-hmm.
He got to the town, you know, it was like a big test number one. If, all right, I'm not coming to that little town, right? Then that would be the end of it.
Mm.
The office tested you, that, you know, first, that come to this town and that's the only day Baba can meet you. And he took trains and just looked at the map and it took another train, and from train it took bus into this town and in a small town, but that's where he was going to meet, you know, meet Mr. Baba in person. Then he made it to town, then had an audition, you know, like regular audition, like, you know, Hindu squats and push-up and sit-ups and do, and Baba look at you and say, right?
Mm.
Then he got okay that day.
Hmm.
Yeah.
And this was in 1987.
Yeah. The spring of 1987. He officially got to All Japan Dojo in June of 1987. And he didn't even have Golden Rookie debut. His first match was December of 1987, the Undercard Battle Royal. Isn't that interesting?
He didn't have, it's very different from Jumbo Tsuruta's debut, for example.
Or Jun Akiyama.
Sure. You know? He started from the bottom.
Oh, pretty much bottom. Right. And he was trained under Baba, of course. And when Dory Funk came in, Dory Funk Jr. trained him a little bit. And late Haru Sonoda, the Magic Dragon, he trained him. And some weeks, Masafuchi trained him. So it's like anybody who was in the ring at the time might train you. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So he was really nobody rookie kind of thing, huh?
And he lost all of his matches for a couple of years.
About a year? Yeah.
It was a year or two? Like 60 matches or something.
In a row.
Yeah.
So he started, but it was relatively quick. You know, it takes usually 10 months to a year for All Japan rookie to debut, you know. But he got in dojo June of 1987 and had a first battle royal match, you know, in December, you know. And the very official debut match was following February 1988 against late Motoshi Okuma, the second match. You know, very much undercard, don't you think?
Mm.
Yeah.
Not the exciting part of the show, especially back then. It was just
yeah, against 45-year-old Motoshi Okuma. Yeah.
That was the style, though, All Japan. They usually had a pretty kind of slower, modest undercard.
Unless you're a golden rookie, huh?
Mm.
It was very interesting, All Japan Dojo tradition, that you usually don't have your own tights or ring shoes. There's at the All Japan Dojo, there's a big cardboard box that the veteran or experienced wrestler, you know, tossed, you know, this his old trunks and shoes. I'm not going to use these tights or the knee pad or this ring shoes, too old, so I'm not going to use it. Somebody can use it and put them in the box, right?
Mm-hmm.
He found blue trunks and Masafuchi's old ring boots. That's what he wore. The blue trunks was interesting one, that it was part of two sets, blue trunks and the blue tights, long tights, blue long tights and blue trunks that the Misawa used only 6 months in Mexico.
Hmm.
And he brought it back and he's not going to use it because he was already Tiger Mask, you know, second That's Tiger right. Mask. Yeah. So he had this blue trunks and blue long tights. It was in a box. And he, young Kobashi, 20-year-old Kobashi, found this blue trunks. All right, I'm going to wear this, right? And then there's another, you know, like a beat up ring boots that looks like Master Fuchi's old boots. All right, I got the costume. That's almost cute, right, in a way.
I mean, he really was not granted anything. He wasn't presented anything or handed anything at the start. He seems.
But that's what made, you know, Kenta Kobashi, though, huh?
That's what made
not
him
very happy start, you know. But that's what the old Japan, because it's almost like bullying, huh? A little bit, but it's like a discipline part, you know. Yeah, and later on, that you know, your character image color would be given, and you have certain image, you know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. That but he had spent the whole year in 1988 undercard, right? And also Great Kabuki at the time told young Kobashi to go wash Baba's in the back, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So he one night without any formal plan that he became Baba's, you know, guy, you know, to carry his bag, you know. That's a one step forward, huh?
That's a big responsibility.
He had to carry Giant Baba's two big suitcase, and while he's taking shower, he's right outside. And what he, you know, if Baba wants something, you know, he'd probably wash his, you know, back or like hand towels, or you know what I'm saying?
You're almost like their personal assistant.
Yeah, like almost like a butler, huh?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It was but the same for a lot of big wrestlers. They had to do the same, like
at the time, yes.
Even
yes.
Like it's Okada and Ultimo Dragon, same kind of relationship.
Right, it's a Riki Dozan and Baba Inoki tradition that carried over 60 years, huh?
Mm-hmm. And it's the tradition of martial arts as well from...
Yeah, I suppose, yeah, the disciples, right?
Mm-hmm. Same idea.
Yeah. Same idea. So he spent entire 1988 like that, and Baba saw something in him, right? And there was a very interesting matchup in 1989, March of 1989 to be exact. Baba decided to tag with young Kenta Kobashi to challenge Asian Tag Team title. Baba never challenged that title, right?
Mm-hmm.
So it was Baba's idea to elevate him one step. Baba and young Kobashi challenged Toshiaki Kawada and Samson Fuyuki's Asian Tag Team title.
Footloose.
Well, because Footloose was on fire, and he probably needed an interesting challenger. And Baba, almost like a playful, right? That he, Baba himself, 1989 version of Giant Baba challenging Asian Tag Team title. Wow! But his Baba's partner was then rookie Kobashi, so that will make a pretty interesting match. But it was very special for Kobashi, you know, to have that. Yeah. And following year, you know, that he and Misawa's version of Tiger Mask had their first Asian Tag Team title. So you could tell from Asian Tag Team title to this, to the singles competition, to going to Champion Carnival, or to compete in a real world tag team tournament in December, that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So he got the rub, though. He got the Baba...
Finally got the Baba's blessing. Yeah.
Yeah. And this is kind of where people might have taken more of an interest in him.
Yeah. And at the time, he was still wearing the tights and the shoes that he found at the dojo. You know,
mm-hmm.
He one night he was wearing red, and Baba told him, red looks good on you. Okay, red tights. You know, that he already found it at the dojo. And the blue tights that he had from Misawa. And there was another blue and red trunks with star on it. Probably Jumbo Tsuda left it there, right? Doesn't that look like it?
It's probably the case.
Yeah, yeah. Or young Koshinaka's, you know, Koshinaka's trunks or something. Yeah. But anyhow, it wasn't even his. He didn't get this neon color bright orange tights until 1990, and it was at the Tokyo Dome where he started. You know, that Tokyo Dome, 1990, meaning at the Wrestling Summit
with WWF,
WWF,
New Japan,
New Japan and Old Japan combined shows, you know, Hulk Hogan against Stan Hansen, the Baba Andre the Giant against Demolition, the Tenryu against Macho Man Randy Savage, and all these things that actually he was, young Kobashi was there too. Isn't that interesting?
And that's where the Orange Crush tights came.
Yeah, came into. Yeah, right. So that became his image color rest of the time that he was with All Japan, all the way to like 2000. So yeah, I guess he wore the neon color orange bright tights for 10 years then. Yeah. And he liked it. And actually that the idea of neon color orange tights came from Baba and real famous singer that... what's his name? From you might know his name. Chiharu Matsuyama. Matsuyama Chiharu is a singer. You know that who's a friend with Baba. I said like, nobody's wearing you know neon color or orange. So how about that? And Kobashi wasn't sure, but somebody said you would look really good with this orange tights, and nobody else. Actually, on the other side, Muto, New Japan Muto was already wearing. Neon color orange at the time.
That's
but,
right.
But what happens on the other side doesn't matter, right?
Mm.
So within all Japan ring, nobody was wearing this bright neon orange color ties. So that became his.
And Kobashi's were a little bit more. They were clearly orange.
Clearly orange, right?
Like, Muto's had a neon flashiness to it. It was a slight subtle difference.
Right, and wasn't exactly like a white boots either. So Kobashi had a white and orange boots, you know. Mm. Yeah, and that's important, right? And he actually started becoming part of the, you know, 1990 was also the year Tenryu and his 15 guys left, went to SWS, Super World Sports, right? And also 1990 was the year Misawa took off his tiger mask and became Mitsuharu Misawa. Therefore, the new era began, right?
Mm.
And the momentum was there for new era. And then the Kobashi was pretty ready, you know, to be not, you know, like to be elevated, you know? And
yeah. Well, he was a natural. I mean, he wasn't a perfect version of himself at that point, but for the most part, the Kobashi we saw in the early 90s is it's an early version of what he'd become for the rest of his career.
Become later on, yes. Yeah.
He was like a lot of the other guys from this time period, when they started...
Yeah, and then Kawada, no more footless costume, but he became just black and yellow, right?
That's right, too. And he started... He was kind of wrestling almost like a junior heavyweight style a little bit more.
Before that.
Got serious.
Oh,
as
I guess
well.
We have to rewind the tape a little, you know, about a year or so. That when Kobashi was still rookie, he was being like a punching bag or that like almost like a guinea pig for two wrestlers. That at the time, the rookie Akira Taue actually started like 2 months after Kobashi came in. Mm-hmm. Did you know that? Well, that Akira Taue, tall and big guy, you know, but like he was a former, you know, Tamakirin, that sumo wrestler. And there was another sumo wrestler, Isao Takagi. He was Takuetsuyama. And it's like both big sumo wrestler turned professional wrestler. Baba thought those two are going to be something, right? Mm. Akira Taue and Isao Takagi, and used Kobashi for the practice in the ring. You know, like Baba's teaching, right? And both Takagi and Taue throwing drop kicks to Kobashi, doing body slam to Kobashi, doing a brainbuster to Kobashi. And Baba said, well, get up, do it again. Get up and do it again. And wasn't really training Kobashi. Baba was training two big rookies, Akira Taue and Isao Takagi. Takagi later on joined Tenryu's group and pretty much disappeared after that. But Akira Taue and this Isao Takagi, two big rookies from sumo, was like a Baba's project at the time.
Mm-hmm.
Kobashi was there for like to take bumps, I guess, you know. And
he's a practice dummy.
Yeah, practice dummy. But Kobashi, you know, in person told me about this story because he wanted to tell somebody about it, you know. And all right, it's like, this is the way it is right now, but it's not going to be like this forever. And he just was telling himself that this is something he has to go through. But he just knew he'll be better than these two. Isn't that interesting?
It gives you a glimpse of the system. The system was tough to get through, especially if you weren't
have a real good amateur wrestling background.
Yeah, you needed some kind of inside
sumo background, or yeah,
you needed something. You needed the background. You needed to have connections.
Yeah, more than being a big body wrestling fan, right?
Mm.
Yeah, but this willingness, you know, and the will, and yeah. Kobashi is very interesting that he was very humble, and very quiet, not being vocal about it, like today's kids might, you know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. If that's how you survive old Japan system, sort of, because I believe New Japan Dojo, it's like more of a company, like you always have more rookies, like 10 guys practicing together. But if you only have two or three rookies together, it's like, it's completely different environment. You just have to be like keep your mouth shut and go through this and I'll make it. Or a lot of guys from Old Japan Dojo, they disappeared at night. You know what I'm saying?
Mm.
Yeah.
More similar to traditional martial arts.
Yeah, grappling. A lot of rookies do disappear from New Japan Dojo too, you know.
Mm-hmm. But some don't make it through the initial training, the
first
test.
Year. Right. So then you become a young lion, right? But Old Japan usually don't have that many, you know, like they never have like a dozen rookie a year, you know, they two or three of them just make it. And some years they went through 5 years with no rookies. You know, yeah. So different kind of environment, because you have more older wrestlers around. Yeah.
Yeah, different environment, and it kind of builds a different sort of character.
I think so.
I think the four in All Japan and the three in New Japan at that time had different flavor and personalities. The nuances were very different, and I
nuances think very different. Right, right.
All Japan is much more. How do you explain that gumball?
Closed society or the family?
No. I was gonna say there's that too. I was thinking more about the one way to think about Kenta Kobashi is to think about the word. I don't know. It's a hard concept to explain, but just the word gumball, to do your best.
Yeah, right. Stick with it, right?
And that concept and how deep it runs. It just in
a way, it's very Japanese, huh?
And I think, yes, and it's a good thing. And I think that's one of Kenta Kobashi's, maybe one of his strongest points. I think a lot of people see and like that in him, that Gambaru spirit.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not doing a good job of articulating, I don't think, but...
That's okay, but no. By going through, you know, what he has done and what he has, you know, gone through, that I hope we are going to, you know, be able to really give this feeling and Kobashi's story, and he really did become part of the main event package by what, 93? Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I think what was it? It was either maybe his matches with Steve Williams, I think, from around that time, or Stan
94?
Hansen.
Yeah, he did not challenge his Triple Crown title until like 94, you know?
Mm-hmm.
With Steve Williams being Triple Crown champion and Kobashi, his first title, you know, like a major title challenge at the main event of at Budokan show. That's big, big show, right?
Mm.
And taking Steve Williams' dangerous backdrop driver and getting up from it, you know. And Steve Williams himself told me that this guy has a lot of heart, you know. Mm. And because Steve Williams, as tough as he was never that smooth high spot, you know, that the wrestler. He just goes out and does his thing, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, sometimes kind of a happen perfect to be great opponent match.
For Kobashi.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And so sometimes happen to be good match, sometimes just, whoa, it's like, well, what's that about kind of match? Yeah.
Very realistic.
Oh, very realistic. And again, wrestling has no language barrier that you just go out there and wrestle, you know? And that was test for Kobashi, you know? And actually, there was a time that Misawa decided to take Kobashi as his tag team partner. You know, regular tag team partner. You know, you would think at the time Misawa and Kawada would be your ideal tag team, huh? You know, around that time period.
Well, but I want to bring up that was also around the time that they had their first Kawada and Misawa had their first singles match,
right?
And that's kind of when the rivalry
it really elevated Kawada from being a younger little brother of Misawa to an equal, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But where did that leave Kobashi? You know, it left him, unfortunately, not any fault of his own. He's behind those two because...
Yeah, but Misawa and Kobashi became tag team partners, and Kawada and Taue became tag team partners.
Mm-hmm.
It balanced. And evidently, 93, 94, 95, three years in a row, Misawa and Kobashi won... The real tag team tournament in December, 3 years in a row. No other team did that.
And among wrestling fans, not just in Japan, but all over the world, some of those matches are considered to be some of the best pro wrestling matches, period, of all time. Those tag team matches.
Yeah. And 94, 95. With old Japan style at the time, it's like all you got to do is let this person watch the video, you know? You don't need English commentary. You just watch the footage.
Hmm.
You know, yeah.
Although the commentary is dramatic.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Nippon TV, yeah. And also, what was interesting was Channel 4 and TV, Nippon TV, Channel 4, is that they bring in their station announcer, not a wrestling person. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
These announcers, station announcers, do other sports like a marathon or... you know, figure skating or the baseball or other sports. So they come in and treat pro wrestling like your professional sport, and they really do a like professional play-by-play. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
So it's not like, you know, they're acting. They get those, you know, network station sports announcers get excited by watching these guys. You know?
It probably added to the realism of the whole product.
Probably, yeah.
You know, it's easier to take it seriously when the person on the serious sports cast takes it seriously.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. So, and also, it was late Saturday night, but people really watched this, you know, Old Japan Pro Wrestling didn't have a very good time slot around that time period. It's like a late Saturday night, you know, like you're talking like 12:30 at night, you know. And but people still tune in and watched and got you know, like rating 0.6 or something, 6% rate. I mean, during the middle of the night, so it's like was high rate show for the midnight, you know, time slot. And yeah, so it was just almost like a fixture, you know, like all watch wrestling before you go to bed kind of thing,
kind of tradition almost.
It became, and sure enough, 96. He won his very first triple crown heavyweight title from Akira Taue in 96. So it took him, you know, like it started 87, 88. Yeah, good 7-8 years. You know, we fast forward a little bit, but he finally got his very first triple crown title from Akira Taue. But it's important. He didn't beat, you know, Misawa for it. He didn't beat Kawada, you know, he beat Akira Taue for that title, you know,
mm-hmm.
One by one, huh?
So that means that becomes the talking point at the bar after the match. That's, well, Kobashi won, but it's Taue, so...
Yeah, it's not exactly Misawa or Kawada.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's not Stan Hansen.
No, Stan. So... You know how many times he got lariated by Stan Hansen? Oh, yeah, it's a famous footage there.
I remember that he even Stan Hansen laid a lariat into him while he was standing up. Kobashi was standing on the top rope, just in the back
Oh,
of his
that
head.
one. Oh,
Towards
yeah.
the end of the match, it was just he took a lot of shit, Kobashi did.
Yeah,
And
Kobashi was taking a lot of solid moves from everybody, you know.
but by
Yeah.
'96, I think that's definitely when the fans were 100% behind him, All Japan.
Right. And
Women
also,
were very
yeah, because he's a
fond of
handsome
him.
guy, and younger than Misawa and Kawada, you know. Taue never had the vibe, you know what I'm saying?
No,
Yeah.
he looked older than he was.
Right.
He
And
reminded
also
everyone
Rana,
of Baba.
yeah, young Baba looking, huh? Yeah, red trunks and all that. Yeah. And around that time period, you know, Jumbo Tsuru was pretty much gone from the main scene. You know, he had, you know, took years off, and when he came back, he only did tag team match. It was never in the main event cluster again. So it was Big Four era. And following year 97, Kobashi formed his own faction called GET, Get Kobashi and Johnny S and the Patriot, you know, the Wilkes.
That's right.
So yeah, remember Get?
Johnny Ace and Kobashi had a nice tag team run for a couple of years in the
yeah
late
yeah
'90s.
the both World Tag Team Champion and Asian Tag Team Champion winner. Yeah. We'll see. Actually, during his All Japan career, Kobashi won the World Tag Team title like six times, twice with Misawa, twice with Johnny Ace, twice with Akiyama. Yeah. And that Get, you know, Johnny Ace and Patriot group, that a little bit later on, it became burning, you know, that Kobashi took Jun Akiyama into his group and formed a new tag team called Burning. And then won the 98 and 99 World Tag Team Tournament. So all in all, he's winning like five tournaments, you know, the tag team tournaments. So that's up there, huh? Yeah. And while he was in All Japan Pro Wrestling, he won the Triple Crown three times. One time beating Taue, another time beating Kawada. In year 2000, right before the formation of Pro Wrestling Noah, he beat Vader for that title,
That's
but
right.
not once from Misawa. It doesn't happen until Pro Wrestling Noah day. Isn't that interesting?
That was the story, and the story seemed to feel, we won't fast forward yet, but the story finishes in Noah, not in All Japan, between those two.
Right.
But I remember the Vader win being very big. That was a big
Yeah.
deal. And
And while Stan Hansen was slowing down and he was getting ready to actually retire, you know, was going to give that his position to Vader. Yeah.
Kobashi had even changed his look a little bit. He had the goatee, a
Yeah, a little bit. Yeah.
little bigger, but it was turning, the time was moving on, and Misawa
And
and Kawada were
Kobashi
getting
not
old.
doing his moonsault, but to start using right arm clothesline.
Right arm
That's his finish.
clothesline. He
Yeah.
started debuting those wild moves like Burning Hammer.
Right, more of a striking. Yeah. Yeah. Because I guess that the moonsault was for the younger part of his career, huh?
But he would always bust it out on a special occasion
Right.
or in a
Okay.
big
Right.
match.
So he really evolved in front of the audience, you know what I'm saying? Yeah. And he was a complete babyface. And if you remember All Japan wrestlers, they don't grab a house microphone and say things. Yeah, no promo at all. It just they tell story with matches, you know, no agitation, no big promo like you of either babyface or heels. It's just they just don't do it, you know. And as hard as they, you know, wrestle during the match, it doesn't make any sense if they get up and do the mic. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
Yeah, because they
Not
work
necessary.
until they can't stand up anymore, you know. And yeah, it was like Baba was in tears, you know, in his color commentary table.
That's
It was
right.
like,
Yeah, he was crying.
remember that one? Yeah, because Baba is like the type of person, he doesn't often pat guys back, right? And even if you're doing well, that he says he just nods. All right,
that's the classic style. That's the classic,
like Godfather style.
Sure, yeah,
yeah,
that's the style. It's, and then it's not common to praise
during
lots.
The broadcasting. You know, during the match, while Kobashi and Misawa is having this great tremendous match, that the announcer looks at Baba, is like, Baba's in tears. Oh my gosh, Mr. Baba's crying, sir. It's like,
well, and Baba's the one who probably might have been the first doubter Kenta Kobashi had, and he really overcame all of that. And that's a real story, you know.
That's a real story. Those are the real wrestling story. Yeah, right.
Yeah. So
that's why it's like it's very, you know, it's easy to believe in Kobashi, really. You know, all you got to do is watch his match. You know, not a character, but he just, his matches and his energies, the way he does things, you know, probably the facial expression too, but it just tells it all.
Everything. I think anybody on the planet would see him, and they don't need to know any information on him, and they would immediately say, he's got to be a pro wrestler.
Yeah,
he must be. He looks like, you know, he's a classic, timeless baby face.
Yeah, yeah. And amazing. Never done promo. You know what I mean?
Hmm. He might say something very polite at the end of the match, like, thank you, everyone.
Thank you very much for coming in. Yeah, I won the title today. Thank you very much. Yeah, that's about it.
Very humble.
Very humble. Very humble. Yeah.
But in the match.
All Japan upbringing kind of thing. Yeah. Very humble.
Show your stuff in the match and be humble afterwards. Not much need for chatting or long-winded.
No. So it's very different. Yeah, that's a very old Japan style, huh?
Mm.
And so year 2000, he won both Triple Crown and won the Champion Carnival Tournament.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
He's probably around his peak in his whole career at this point, I would say. I mean,
around 2000? Yeah. Then June of 2000, the Misawa and his guys, meaning that everybody from all Japan roster, but Kawada and Fuchi and the ring crew to, ring announcer to referee to everybody, pretty much everybody.
Backstage, right? Office people. Everyone.
Office people too, right? So to form, get on Noah's Ark and forming Pro Wrestling Noah. It was Misawa's idea, you know? And Kobashi was the first person, yeah. And then the Pro Wrestling Noah era starts. The first thing they did was that they changed color, you know. And Misawa didn't change color. You know, it's always, you know, this emerald green and silver. That's his color. But Kobashi's neon orange tie was no more. And then he had this black trunks with purple in it. Remember?
That's right. It was like like the fires going out, the orange fire.
And the side, yeah.
Like, and coal, like burnt.
Mm-hmm. And Jun Akiyama's tights from blue to like a silver white.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And everybody pretty much changed costume. And people like, you know, the Yoshihiro Takayama came with them too, you know, into
Pro
Wrestling Noah. Yeah. Yeah.
And even it was big. Vader, crew. Scorpio.
Yeah. Scorpio. Yeah. They went to, you know, Misawa went to, you know, Missouri and met with Harley Race and got a guys from Harley Race's camp, you know, World Wrestling League, and brought in quite a few wrestlers. And the guys like Mike Modesty was like from California, their group came in. And
for Misawa, Bison Smith,
yes. Bison Smith, well, he died young too, but Bison Smith was like a big rookie too at the time.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But it all felt like that crew, that initial Noah crew, felt like they could be another foreign crew for All Japan at that time. It was the same.
It looked like these guys are All Japan. Yeah.
Right. It was same fit, same style that you would have seen. So if you liked.
And and start running Budokan shows, you know? Just like what All Japan was doing. But it's written in the book. But Mrs. Baba was, you know, the stubborn enough that I'm keeping the company, right?
Mm-hmm.
And brought in all the independent wrestlers and got a little bit of help that Muto wanted to work. Then, you know, the year 2000 would, you know, and still under, Keiji Muto still technically under contract to New Japan, but the New Japan had an idea at the time that they wanted to buy All Japan, right? Mm-hmm. So they were running combined show like All Japan and New Japan, like a 5 year too late dream matches, right?
Yeah, there were a couple of those.
Yeah.
Some were huge.
Some were good, yeah.
I mean, Kobashi, Kensuke Sasaki is maybe the most memorable of those.
Kobashi and Kensuke,
that would happen a little later.
It wouldn't happen until like 2005, though. Yeah, yeah. 2004 was Pro Wrestling Noah's very first Tokyo Dome card. It was Akiyama against Kobashi, and it was the match of the year in the Tokyo Sports Award. Mm-hmm. And the match you just said, 2005 Tokyo Dome, second Pro Wrestling Noah's Tokyo Dome show, that Kensuke Sasaki against Kobashi was also a match of the year that year. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And they created, you know, GHC title, you know, Global Honor Championship.
That's right.
Title. Yeah. And of course, you know, sure enough that the Misawa was a, you know, very first champion. But it was when 2003 that that Kobashi finally beat Misawa in single match to get the title.
That was one of the more memorable calls on commentary I remember. The announcer, I think the announcer was, again, not Baba, but the announcer was in tears.
Tears, yeah. And also, yeah, before 2003, Kobashi and Misawa had probably a dozen single matches, right? Mm-hmm. By then. But not one match, you know, Kobashi won. But it wasn't until 2003 at the Budokan, you know, the very initial, you know, it was still second year, but the early stage of pro wrestling in Noah, that the champion, Misawa finally meeting Kobashi for the title match at Budokan, and Kobashi for the first time beat Misawa for the title.
How many years would that be? That would be
ever since he was a rookie. Yeah.
So yeah, more than 10 years.
More than 10 years. Yeah. Yeah. Well, 88 to 2003. So it'll be like more like 15 years, huh?
It's a long time for a story to pay off.
So it's that hard to beat Misawa in single match situation. Mm. Yeah. But this run, you know, 2003 to 2005, you know, he kept a, you know, a GHC title for 2 years. Yeah. But before that, you know, we got to, you know, rewind the tape a little bit, because now that he's, you know, he had a lot of injuries, you know, between 2001 and between 2002, Kobashi had to take a year off with, you know, both knee operation, like a reconstruction, you know, surgeries. Yeah.
The moonsault.
That and like years and years of pounding, right?
Mm. Yeah, he worked a hard style. That's right.
Yeah, and then came back 2002, and the comeback match was interesting, that the Kobashi and Misawa against Akiyama and Yuji Nagata of New Japan. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was interesting. Then worked for a while. Then he had another injury, you know, pretty soon, that it's like he come back and get injured and come back and get injured, right? So his body was taking toll, you know, the style he's been doing all through the 90s, huh? You know?
I mean, and these guys were doing, especially when we talk about hard-hitting wrestling, when we think about Kobashi, Misawa,
those Kawada. Yeah, Kawada wasn't involved with this wrestling. No, but at the time, yes, yeah. And Jun Akiyama and Akira Taue, of course. And
the level of violence. Noah,
Takayama was Takayama was involved, too. It's not that there's any, you know, like your American, like, wrestling storyline, that nobody really hated each other. It just had athletic, hard-hitting match, convincing wrestling match, you know.
And they were pushing the athletic boundaries too.
I think
some of those guys they were suplexing each other off of the apron onto the floor.
Yeah,
I mean, it was very it was new. It went further than New Japan was going. I mean, New Japan, it's not like New Japan was any, it was just a different style of it, and especially these guys.
Yeah, I think so.
Big. They're big guys.
So we have to think that, like, there must be like a certain kind of trust the only wrestlers, you know, share like a code, huh?
Mm-hmm. Deep trust and faith in each other to pull off those kind of matches.
Make sure that this guy can take it. You know what I'm saying? Mm. Yeah. Well, they don't try to injure each other. They just ended up injuring themselves. Yeah. So it's really unfortunate that this kind of injury really happened, you know. And on top of that, 2006, if you remember, that Kobashi had kidney cancer.
That's right.
Yeah, yeah. It was June of 2006, and they really announced it publicly that Kenta Kobashi has cancer. He's taking some time off. And he had surgery, and it took year and 6 months. Yeah, he wouldn't come back until December of 2007. At the same time, while he was rehabbing from this kidney cancer, he had another major operation on his both knees. Yeah. And he did come back 2007 at the Budokan show, you know, Misawa Akiyama against Kobashi and Takayama. You know, you would think you lost a lot of weight, right? While he was rehabbing with cancer and had a major operation on both knees. And he was gone for like 18 months. Mm. But he came back just as big. So he must really worked out where he could work out, right?
I very much remember the reaction in the crowd.
Oh, all in tears.
It was pretty, maybe one of the high point moments in Kobashi's career, when I think about it. I mean, those images you think about when you think Kobashi, those big, big,
memorable moments. People would be forgiving if he retired then, you know what I'm saying?
Of course. Because by that time, wrestling was in a different state than it was in the 90s.
From 90s, right. But Kobashi said he'll make comeback, and he really did come back that, mm-hmm. 2007 in December. But at the time, he came back, though, but all he did was those signature chops. Mm. You know what I'm saying?
Chops. Yeah. And he would be in a tag team match. And
right, not quite single match situation anymore. But it looked like Kobashi, but he was doing what he could do. And that signature Kobashi, the backhand chops. Yeah.
Right. It didn't feel like sad, or embarrassing.
No, he was just it's okay, take a break, right? Mm. But he was trying to, give 100% to the audience again. And again, he got injured, I think it was like the following summer, and took, this time he operated right elbow, and it's like an elbow injury this time, and took another 6 months off, It's okay, do not come back, right? But he insisted, he'll come back. So after 6 months and the major elbow operation, he comes back like 2010. Then he gets injured again, have another 6 months off, It's okay, do not come back, right? Then he comes back like in 2011 again. Then he gets injured and get 7 months off, And he finally make his announcement year 2012, And then, he didn't almost have to have this retirement match, don't you? What do you think of that? Yeah.
I think if he wanted to have retired in 2007, I don't think the...
Maybe it was a great career he had.
And there's nothing wrong with, clocking out in 2007. He was still... It wasn't a point... He didn't have a point in his career where he really dipped in his talent or his athleticism or health. Always him. And... I think the crowd would have been more than forgiving. And
right. But and also that we should point this out, that the summer of 2009, we lost Misawa in the ring.
That's right.
Yeah. So I guess that's how, Kobashi felt that I'm going to make one more comeback, because they lost Misawa in the ring,
That was a giant shift in the makeup of Noah. And
hasn't been the same since, right? Mm-hmm. So Pro Wrestling Noah is still Pro Wrestling Noah, but it's a different kind of Pro Wrestling Noah. That it's just like today's New Japan Pro Wrestling isn't Anthony Inoki is, you know, All Japan, New Japan Pro Wrestling. Today's All Japan Pro Wrestling isn't Giant Baba's All Japan Pro Wrestling. It still exists, but so Pro Wrestling, you know, goes on, and they have, you know, current version of Pro Wrestling Noah, but pretty much around this 2009-2010, I think that initial era of this Misawa Kobashi version of Pro Wrestling Noah was over with.
That was the, yeah, I guess you could use that as the end point. That era, yeah. It was really, Tawei, I don't know, I can't remember how active he was in 2010, 2011, but.
Right. And people like Marufuji and Kenta and Sugiura all debuted, you know, already. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And Morishima.
Morishima, or Makoto Hashi, and those people are like in the main event cluster, you know, the group. So it was time to move on, huh?
It felt like that was the end of that era from, like, you know, 92 to about 2010.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So then all these rookies like Go Shiozaki or you know Ricky, all these people they debuted with Pro Wrestling Noah, not from All Japan.
That's right. So yeah. They have I think maybe only Marufuji, Kenta, maybe Sugiura.
Sugiura didn't even debut with Pro Wrestling, but Kenta was a rookie with All Japan, you know, mm-hmm. like a youngest rookie, like a ring boy rookie.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And Kanemaru and Kanemaru. From...
Right, they were rookie. Right, Kanemaru was the very end of All Japan. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And of course, Marufuji. Marufuji was like Misawa's favorite from the day one, and Misawa gave all tights and you know shoes to Marufuji. So mm-hmm. yeah, so that tradition was there, huh?
Yeah, the bloodline is—it's still there.
Yeah, yeah. So finally, the spring of 2013, at the age of 46, Kobashi retired. Finally, 2013 is almost 10 years ago. You know, it didn't seem like year, you know, 10 years ago. But yeah, he really retired. For you know, for good this time.
And we talked about it a little bit earlier, but he didn't necessarily disappear from the business like somebody like Kawada did.
Right, Kawada disappeared on purpose. Yeah, mm-hmm. yeah.
Whereas Kobashi stayed a regular part of the scene.
Commentator,
promoter. Guest for
yeah, he has a Fortune KK company he runs
yeah
and he every now and then twice a year he runs his own show mm-hmm. yeah and Kobashi was probably one of the very few people who can go to All Japan and do the color commentary and go to Pro Wrestling Noah and be a guest commentator and he makes appearance at some you know different companies different Korakuen shows and always welcome because he walks in like superstar still yeah. He carried himself as a superstar. He's retired, but he still looked like Kenta Kobashi, you know? I mean, didn't lose it. It's just he wears suit, you know, he wears suits, but he's just as big and probably bigger than today's wrestlers, some of the, you know, today's wrestlers.
Mm.
And he looks like star still.
Yeah, he looks like himself still.
Yeah, he does. Just like the one we thought, you know, that the Masa Chono's episode from last week. Mm. Yeah, Kobashi is another person. He still has this, you know, star presence.
And as he's gotten older and since he's retired, he's been able to make appearances all over the world, like in the United States for signings and
meet and greets. He's
more accessible, and it was a different time in the 90s. So.
And also, he's one of the very few, if not only one, Japanese stars that he didn't tour overseas, you know, in like an excursion, like send you out to overseas and spend a year or two and come back as a superstar, you know, like the formula.
Right. There was talk of him doing that, something like, I know WWF did want to do something with him in the 90s.
Yeah, and then during the early years of Pro Wrestling Noah, like in 2005, he did go to ROH show and had a single, you know, famous single match against Samoa Joe.
Mm-hmm. It felt like it was a little late
Late, huh?
Unfortunately, that's just that's how it is. That's no one's
fault.
Yeah, and
during '90s, you know, the All Japan wrestler wasn't sent. Because Misawa didn't have a big, long tour in America either. He went to Mexico for like 8 months period, and he had to come back to be Tiger Mask, right? Mm-hmm. Kawada did spend a couple of years overseas, though, you know, like, but in San Antonio, Texas, or up in Montreal, but Kawada wasn't exactly main event at the time. See, yeah, I always wonder if Kobashi toured states in his prime time. Yeah.
I wonder how he would have, I don't, you know, it was a different time period, but do you think he would have been received the same way?
But it was decade before the internet or, you know, streaming. It was during the VHS tape era. And also, where would he, would have toured? Because 90s was... in like when he was becoming superstars in Japan, it was Monday Night War era. WWF against WCW, and then the third company ECW, but everything else was pretty much gone. No territories, no smaller companies. You know, it's a different time. Yeah.
So he never had that. There are a handful of superstars that had a massive reputation in Japan that don't have the same reputation overseas. Like Kobashi, fortunately he did have a chance to come over, and he's still active within the scene, so he's still in everybody's minds. But guys like Akira Maeda or Riki Choshu, or some, even like Akira Taue to an extent, I don't know if he's talked about, he's just accepted or perceived a different way here than he is in Japan. And I think it's exposure. It was harder to...
Right, different exposure, yeah. Because if you don't follow Japanese wrestling, they probably don't know the name. Yeah. Some American fans only watch major promotions, you know? And that the VHS tape traders, yes. But it's not really mass, you know? And but you have to watch Misawa against Kobashi, or Kobashi against Kawada, Kawada against Taue, all these, you know, big four plus Jun Akiyama. Those were the great, great matches, you know. And it had to be in their environment too. So I guess now you have to watch all tapes, footage from All Japan and early pro wrestling North to really know about Kenta Kobashi.
But I think of any of the wrestlers we talk about, I think Kenta Kobashi is one of the most timeless types of wrestlers you can watch. You can really watch him, and you don't have to be from any generation to appreciate how
and
he
also
wrestles.
I don't think his matches get old.
Not at all.
You can watch his 1993 match today, and just you're in awe. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Anything from the early 90s until... you know, around the
2005-06, and it's good that those tape, you know, exist, you know. And 90s All Japan into 2000 Pro Wrestling Noah, until he got sidelined, he had this two distinctive era, like a peak era, the All Japan mid to late 90s into Pro Wrestling Noah's early 2000s. Neon, the orange color tights era, to black and purple tights era. Triple Crown era to GHC title era. So those were his peak years. Yeah.
And those are the years, go out of your way to watch those. You know, if you...
I think so.
I'm just going to reiterate, he's timeless. You can watch.
Yeah.
He's a type of wrestler, I don't know how to put it other than he always had the answer at the right time. He could do the right thing he needed to do at the right time. And he's
there to take it, you know what I mean?
He had such a unique energy, like a aura almost. It's really easy to get behind a guy like Kenta Kobashi. He's a natural baby.
Natural baby face.
Definition of a natural baby face.
Natural baby face.
Any scene, he can go anywhere. And it's so fundamentally good and sound.
I kind of don't think he really, felt, was thinking he was baby face. He just was being himself, though.
Which actually makes him more of a
A baby
baby
face.
face.
Yes, right. As a
It's
result.
organic. It's organic. It's who he is.
Oh, very organic, right. Natural. So, yeah.
He never really wavered in his personality. He's not like last week we talked about Masahiro Chono, and he had a transformation, and his career
And also,
character.
he's like a cool character. Yeah.
Very different approach too.
Different approach. Kobashi came from countryside. He came to Tokyo and he became a wrestler. And against all odds, he became such a big superstar, And then
Didn't
wrestling.
do, he wasn't focused on doing anything special. He was focused on doing everything perfectly and as strong as he could.
Yeah, and then he wasn't exactly a wrestler who could only work against Japanese. He had tag team combination with people like Johnny Ace, Patriot. He had series of single match against Stan Hansen. He had single matches with Vader, and with tag team tournament, he had all the like a so-called Gaijin crew on him, right? So yeah, so he could work with everybody like Gary Albright, all these.
Yeah,
Yeah.
it's interesting to think about what else he could have done if he were to be able
To
to
go
come.
overseas and see the
Sure.
world. Yeah. It just didn't happen that way. But now that we're closing the year 2022, now I guess we have to go back and watch Kobashi's matches in his prime time.
Let's do that.
Yeah, I'll do that. Yeah. A handful of matches I have to watch. It's like this version of Misawa single match, this version of Misawa-kun and the Kobashi against Kawada match, or this version of Kobashi against Stan Hansen match. And yeah, and Stan elevated him too, from like treating him like a young guy, treating him like a becoming star guy, treating him like equal. And I guess he gave Stan longevity too, huh?
Yeah, and I mean,
Yeah.
he started using the lariat after that match, and that's always a nod to Stan, so it's in him as well.
Giant Baba was almost against, Kobashi's idea to bring right arm clothesline, as a finish, because it's somebody else's, and do something else, like jumping neck breaker drop, like what Giant Baba would do in the big matches, which Kobashi was using in his rookie years. Yeah.
But I think over time it became one of the defining parts of his matches.
Yeah.
And his big wins were with that. A lot of his big wins were with
Yes.
that.
And finally, Kobashi beat Stan Hansen 1-2-3 in the middle of the ring with his right arm clothesline.
That
That's
was
like
big.
Yeah, that was like a end of an era too, also.
And I don't think Kawada even had a win over Hansen, did he?
Stan, I don't recall that.
Yeah,
Yeah.
so it's another reason why Stan Hansen was pretty important in Kobashi's career.
Yeah, and I think Stan Hansen choose him to be that person. I mean, nobody beat Stan Hansen 1-2-3 in the middle of the ring, right?
Very, very
Very rare.
rarely,
Yeah.
yeah.
Yeah, so it was Stan's choice or choosing to do so. Yeah.
So,
Wow.
Kenta Kobashi, yeah. I guess the
Yeah.
homework
So
is
we
to watch videos.
we could talk about Kobashi all night long, but yeah.
But yeah, he's still active. His story isn't really over because he's out and about, and he's still doing the Fortune KK shows, and
And
he's
I
on
think
All
he
Japan
might be the
commentary
only
sometimes.
person available or only person that the capable of bringing All Japan Pro Wrestling and Pro Wrestling Noah onto same table to do the All-Star match or something.
He is that kind of ambassador type character,
Don't you think?
like a
Yeah.
Keiji Muto or some Masa Chono, somebody like that.
So I think he still have major role in wrestling.
He still has a lot of influence on the scene.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah.
All right. So if we have questions about Kenta Kobashi, where can we reach you, Fumi?
On Twitter, at Fumihiko Dayo, FUMIHIKODAYO, our friend here.
All right. And on Twitter, I'm at Justin M. Nipper, KNIPPER. That's it for this week. Until next time, happy Thanksgiving.
Happy Thanksgiving. Yes.
Take it away.
So long from Tokyo.